Is there any way out of feeling hopeless? Welcome to the Therapy Brothers podcast.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Tyler.
We're brothers.
We're therapists.
And we know recovery.
Bring your stories, your questions, your successes with real recovery.
Hey, Tyler, you ready to have some hard conversations?
Let's do it.
Let the Therapy Brothers podcast begin. Hey, Tyler, how's it going?
Going pretty good, man. How are you doing?
Good. I got to tell you a story.
Okay.
So Saturday night, so it's Monday morning right now. Saturday night, I was up late. I was watching basketball and my kids were up late with me and I'm sitting on the couch in my house and my son, my 8-year-old, turns to me and says, "Oh, Dad, that stinks." And he's like accusing me of something, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Oh, that wasn't me." And then it started getting worse and worse. And I walked in my kitchen and it smelled like a skunk had sprayed in. My dog walked out on our deck, got sprayed in the face. And ran back in the house and got scared and went and jumped in the middle of our house on the couch where nobody was, and was on this couch with skunk spray. Have you ever been close to a skunk spraying? Like,
oh man. Yeah. My dog several times has been sprayed by a skunk. So I know that.
It's dude, terrible. It's like that happened in my living room.
Yeah, it's just like
my whole house. It was still midnight fresh. On Saturday. It was just like, The vent system picked it up, boom, all over my house. Skunk just spread.
Terrible.
And now I think I'm coming to work today and like I'm one of those guys that I'm in the scent now and I don't know that I smell like it, but I'm like, you know, so like I'm going to be walking around my office and people are going to be like, "Oh, skunk."
Dude, like, you're either a skunk or is that guy smoking marijuana? One of the two. Yeah.
And so yesterday I had to bathe my dog 4 times. Like create this concoction that Google gave me of like,
I was
scrubbing all day long yesterday. And that was my weekend.
Oh, geez, man. It's great. I'm sorry. That's in some ways that might be a metaphor for our topic today a little bit. Just like when the thing about getting your dog sprayed by a skunk too, is it feels like it's never going to leave.
Oh my goodness.
Even if you wash them with all of the, I think ours was like a mix of hydrogen peroxide and baking soda and all sorts of other things.
That's what I used. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So
man, I'm sorry.
I was sitting there like yesterday, like, is having dogs worth it? Is it really worth it?
Is it worth it?
Gosh.
Yeah.
Anyways. Yeah. It was a great weekend.
Jeez, man. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Good luck fumigating your house.
Yeah. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, so that's crazy.
If anyone who knows me is listening and I smell like skunk right now, you'll understand why.
Just tell him so he knows.
I'm going to buy some skunk traps today.
Yeah.
So we'll see if we have any luck with that. So
yeah, dang man.
Anyways, you wanted to talk about hopelessness.
Yeah. This is like a topic that it's something that I go in and out of myself a lot. And I feel like it's a really, really normal thing for people to go through in recovery a lot. And sometimes in the certain stages of recovery, you know, our clients, Brandon, they go through this. It's almost like a roller coaster, these big waves, especially at the beginning, you know, when there's a whole bunch of emotion that's going on back and forth. And it feels like at some moments all is lost. And at other moments it's like, oh, there's this little ray of hope. And then maybe I get a little bit of respite, but then it drops back down into the pit. And whether you're the person who's been betrayed or whether you're the person who's done the betraying or have the addiction or have been trying to fight an addiction for your whole life, there's this, just this feeling sometimes of hopelessness, helplessness. I would even go as far as saying despair, darkness. And I just thought maybe we'd have a discussion today on that for anyone listening who might be in that space, and hopefully have a discussion that will leave with some practical things to think about and some tools and also just a ray of hope today.
Okay. So this is, it's interesting as you bring this up, Tyler, talking about hopelessness doesn't sound very exciting.
No.
It doesn't sound very fun.
No.
Yeah. And because hopelessness is like a void that it's like a monster that, that can never be satiated. It's a black pit of nothingness, that, and that's how it feels. That's and one of the problems with it, what we see with addiction too, Tyler, is hopelessness feeds itself. If I'm hopeless, then I can justify doing any horrible thing.
It's its own form of denial in a lot of ways.
Yeah, who cares anyways?
Yeah.
And then if I go do those horrible things while I'm hopeless, what do I feel?
More hopelessness.
More hopeless. So, yeah, this question is a big question. How do I get out of this void? How do I not feed this monster anymore and turn the tide on it? I think I do have some answers. I think you do too. But I think we need to start with just saying when you're in those moments, how difficult it feels to actually shift, to actually get out of it.
It feels like, you know, I'll give a couple of references here. You know, just working with the clients that we work with, you're working so hard to try to get better. You're working so hard to try to improve yourself. And then something happens that goes, oh, like all is lost. You know, I somehow slip and have a relapse, or, you know, I'm working like crazy to try to save my marriage, but then there's a little piece of misunderstanding or some dishonesty or something. And, oh, it feels like, you know, I've lost everything. And then in that moment, Brandon, what you said is, I think, really important. The hopelessness then wants to drag us into more poor decisions. And it's like, well, it's all is lost anyway. I'm going to go relapse again, because in this little moment right now, it feels like my whole marriage is blown up and gone. And so, and I was thinking, like, I get images of certain things. And now this is one that most people might mock me for, but, you know, the never ending story, the movie that
you love to bring this never ending story up.
It's the nothing.
You just love Valcor. You just,
yeah, Valcor.
I love Valcor.
My favorite part of the movie is when Atreyu finally kind of has his moment where he's gone into the darkest pit and there's no other way out other than to face Gwork, which is the, you know, the wolf or something that represents the nothing. And he finally faces up. He's like, come for me. Let's have this out finally, you know, whatever. But
come for me, Gwork.
Come for me, Gwork. You know?
Yeah, you make me laugh.
Yeah, I know. So, but that idea,
it's like so dramatic. Come for me, Gwork.
Yeah. But that idea, I'm sitting there thinking of a different place in the movie where the big, I don't even remember what his name was, the big rock monster,
yeah,
is in his place of helplessness. He was trying to hold on to the people that he loved, and the nothing came and stripped him of it and took those people. And he was in this place of like total shame and failure and devastation. And he's looking at his hands saying, these look like big, strong hands, but he couldn't do anything about it. You know, that kind of an image or that kind of a feeling. Or I love the movies, the Lord of the Rings movies, and the books are even better. But in those movies, it's a series of iterations of the same thing over and over again, where they work their way further into their journey. They actually get closer to their final destination. And the further they get in, the more desperate becomes their plight, the more hopeless it feels. And it goes through these moments where they're like down in the pit, there's no way out of this. And then all of a sudden there's a little ray of light. There's, yep, Gandalf shows up, or the eagles show up, or
the trees show up to battle, yeah, the fight, to win the war.
Yeah. Some in a lot of ways, some outside source of light gets just reflected in just enough to, and it doesn't fix everything or like finish the story. It gives them enough hope to just keep going. And, yeah. And so that's, yeah, kind of what I'm thinking about, you know?
Well, okay. Let's go back to your favorite movie, Never Ending Story.
It's not my favorite movie.
The nothing. I mean, it's such a good depiction of that hopelessness is nothingness. And what's interesting about it is, Tyler, you've worked drug court. before. I've worked in community funded programs. I've worked with substance abuse a lot. We've worked with sex addiction for years and years. And there's a term that is used almost like it's just a common term. And we've said it on the podcast before, but it's the efforts. Explain what is the efforts?
Getting a case of the efforts is that denial of hopeless helplessness where it's like, oh, well, what the hell? You know, like I've already messed up. It's already let down. And this is that is actually the psychological term for it. You know, when, you know, Duke University studied women and their body image after having them eat a donut really fast and drink a big thing of water, they were much more likely to then go into the next room and just have at it with a table of candies.
Gorge themselves.
Yeah. And the whole mindset was that exactly the efforts, like, yeah. Oh, well, I've already messed up. I've already let go on my values. I've already lost whatever it is, my hopes, dreams, whatever it is. I'm just going to continue to fail. I'm just going to continue. I'm going to let myself go.
Right. So if there's, you know, tying this nothing concept back to that, you get yourself in a state of mind of there's no point. Like, what's the purpose of life, of anything? So therefore, F it. Like, and therefore, I've now eaten this donut, or I've relapsed, or I've started this fight with my spouse, or whatever it is. So whatever, like, F it. There's nothing. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Nothing matters. Okay. And this, so this train of thought, if we look at this and we're talking about the nothingness, it really almost shows us an answer out of this, which is the opposite of nothing, which is something. Right. Yeah. So in that darkness, you talk about Lord of the Rings, when they look at their journey and they think, you know, where do I go from here? And then all of a sudden there's a ray of light. There's something. There's reason. There's hope. But, and Tyler, this is a tough question to answer. I think, how do you find that something when you're in that abyss? How do you find that ray? How do you see it? How do you open yourself up to it?
That's a good question, because the deeper you get into hopeless helpless, the less it feels like there is any source of light, right? It's like the darkest, it's similar to that idea of the darkest, coldest part of the whole nighttime is just before the dawn starts, you know, where the earth that you're sitting in the dark has been starved of the sun the longest and it's the coolest. And so it feels like there is no hope, right? But being able, I like what you said there, that there, and this maybe comes into a whole other discussion, which we can or not have today if you want to, on coming back around to faith. You know, that there will be a ray of light eventually, because there's always light. And sometimes we have to actually do some kind of work on the way that we look at things to recalibrate where we're finding purpose and what we're choosing to sort of believe in terms of what this life is about, what these struggles and trials are about. I know we had a podcast episode just recently on something similar to this. But that idea of clinging to meaning, clinging to purpose, looking for, even attempting to look up and find whatever those rays of light may be. And there's a couple ideas I have on that too, but I think that's the pivotal part.
That's easier said than done, though. When I'm in that pit, and if you came along and said, you know, have some faith, find a reason, there's a purpose, I'd say screw you. Yay. Okay. Yeah, I'll do that.
It doesn't feel that way right now.
Right. Like, where I'm at right now is, where I'm at. And you can tell me all day long that there's purpose out there. That's not what I feel. And so Tyler, this kind of lends to one of my first tools or things that is important is, I was talking with a friend last week who is extremely depressed. has clinical depression, is very depressed. And I actually went to lunch with this guy, and he said, "You don't know what it took to get me here today, like to get me out of bed and to get here today." He's like, you think it's easy, but it feels like I got a massive sickness, like the flu or something, and I don't want to move at all, and I don't want to do anything. And it's so easy to just make the reasons and the excuses not to. And so, and he was there. So here's a couple of pointers. He has a support system. I love him. He's my friend. Some of our other friends are there too. We love him. He's our friend. So he has a support system, and he was relying on his support system. He got himself out of bed that morning and got himself to that lunch that day. And he committed to himself, like, "I'm hopeless. I feel like garbage. I'm not, but you know what? I have to do something today. I have to move. I have to, whether it's go to lunch with my friends, or whether it's go exercise, or whether it's go get up and go to work that day. Like, I can't let myself say, no, you can't, or no, you won't. I have to." So even though he's feeling hopeless, he can force himself to do those things. And just that inertia to move, to do, starts to turn the tide on the hopelessness a little bit. So it's the recovery capital we talk about all the time, Tyler. It's the support system, and then it's having good structure in your life that no matter what you're going to go through, that's going to help you not go lower into that abyss, right?
Yeah, I think what you're getting at, Brandon, too, is as you get deeper into recovery, it almost, this discussion, this topic almost illustrates the importance for the necessity of establishing the right kinds of healthy habits in recovery. You know, that, like you said, it's the actual habit of wrestling with God. It's the habit of practicing gratitude. It's the habit of building a team. It's the habit of physical exercise. It's those habits that you're building towards your better self that also become part of the sort of pathway out of the darkness when it all goes bad, you know. And I got this picture in my mind. I know I'm thinking in pictures today, but you know, when you go fishing and you catch a fish, by the time you've fought that fish into you and you've netted them and you've unhooked them and you put them back in the water, a lot of times they are so exhausted that they just sort of go right behind a rock and they just breathe. They just breathe for a while to regain their strength. They don't have the energy to go do, you know, the 30 dailies that I normally do in a day. What they have the energy to do is maybe get in behind a rock and get some structure and then focus on breathing. But if you have those habits that you've established, and some of those things are no matter what's because they are happening, those are one way to get the movement going, to get the energy going, to get to buy a little bit of time. And and to go along with what you're saying, I think it's important that those things, the example with your friend with depression, I think is a pivotal thing. He probably didn't leave that lunch and be like, "Oh, I'm so glad I came. That was awesome.
I'm better now. I'm better."
Right. He probably left with like, "That was hard, but it was good for me."
Yeah.
And I'm going to probably, I'm less depressed now than I was, but I'm also not all better.
The battle rages on.
Yeah. And yet that was an awesome battle he did. That was an amazing battle he did. He won the battle, even though he doesn't feel great.
Right.
Because he at least turned towards those things that can help him to find the light. And when people are in that place of like pure hopelessness and helplessness, sometimes they pile more suffering on by expecting themselves to be at a certain level, when in reality, the simplification of just today makes a massive difference.
Yep.
I've just got to get through today the best I can today with the energy level I have, which might be pretty low right now.
Right.
But I'm going to do my best today, and I'm going to focus only on today. I'm going to have to surrender the bigger picture, the bigger outcomes. I've got to do my best today.
Got to get up today. Now, that's even. Let's say you had the worst relapse of your life the night before. Like you crossed lines that you never thought you'd cross. It's on that day that you need to show up to group. It's on that day that you need to go to work, that you need to get out of bed, that you need to get moving toward recovery as opposed to further away, which is into that hopelessness.
That's right. That's right. People take mental health days all the time, but when you're depressed, you take a mental health day and that turns into a mental health 2 weeks, you know, of laying in bed. And I don't mind a good mental health day, but I try to make sure that it's truly a one day thing. And the next day it's something has to happen. Some type of movement has to happen.
Yep.
You know,
yep. Yeah, you know, Rex is, I'm going to botch this. He has a theory that's something like this. You know, in order to not be depressed or hopeless, you just have to do three things. And I think I'm probably getting this wrong, but it's close. You have to get a good night's rest. So you got to get some sleep. You have to exercise regularly and serve somebody every day. And that's your best medicine for not getting stuck in that hopelessness. So get outside of yourself, help somebody else out. And you think about that, Tyler. If I am actively looking for opportunities and serving somebody, and I'm taking care of my body, and I'm feeling rested and rejuvenated, it's a much better chance that I'm not locked in this place of hopelessness.
100%. I agree wholeheartedly with all three of those things that, you know, proper rest, when you're hopeless, proper rest is extremely important.
Yeah.
Serving others is that perspective maker changer. It's, you know, when we're hopeless and helpless, we're in the bottom of the pit. We're in there
inside
and
yourself.
Everything is going inward. It's like, what about me? What about me? What about me? Look at my pain. Look at how I'm bad. Look at how I'm not good enough. Look at like this and that and the other. And when you take an action to make a simple act towards bettering somebody else's life, it's instantly a perspective changer.
Yeah.
So that makes a ton of sense. Not to mention that there are certain chemicals that fire off when you serve somebody else that help you to naturally feel better. And that feeling better is, I think, is part of the light. That's
right.
The light, you know, and then the physical exercise is the ultimate in moving energy. It's the ultimate in saying, okay, there's this cloud here, but if I go and I push through this cloud, my brain is going to fire off chemicals that's going to give me that endorphin rush, that dopamine rush. There's going to be something that'll give me a chance to at least today, at a minimum, have some respite from the pain that I've been feeling or the heaviness that I've been feeling. And at a maximum, it might actually help me to feel truly better or feel good.
Yep.
So I love those three things. And, you know, I would maybe add to the serving others one, you know, that idea of perspective change, something that has been really valuable in my own life is the practice of gratitude, which seems totally counterintuitive when you're feeling hopeless and helpless. But if you'll take the time to just ponder, even in the darkest places, there is always something to be grateful for. Mm-hmm. You know, I sit there, have a client, this has happened more than once, where they're literally at the end of the rope, they're ready to take their own life, holding on to a gun or something. And they're sitting there feeling like all is lost and hopeless and helpless. And they look down and they see their dog and go, oh, I'm so glad I got my dog. My dog is such a good friend. That's the thing that keeps them.
If it hasn't been sprayed by a skunk.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But that's the thing that keeps them from like actually following through on the ultimate act of hopelessness. Right. I've had this happen a lot with my clients, the ones that really struggle, that have a hard time reaching out for help. When they're in their darkest places, they'll actually reach out to somebody else in their group or their sponsor or something else and just express gratitude to them for who they are in their lives. And that's their way of like trying to shift and change the energy that they're sitting in.
Well, I'm going along with this gratitude thing, exercise, serving others, sleep, gratitude. These are all things that your hopelessness is going to tell you don't do. I don't like that. That's the, yeah, no, not even close to practicing gratitude today, or exercising or whatever. And that's why there are things that you need to do in order to get out of your hopelessness, because they're the opposite of that. Along with the gratitude thing, for me, Tyler, the simple joys of life really matter. Like, you know how much I love eggs. I've always loved eggs. Like 2 days ago, I'm trying to eat more protein. 2 days ago, I boiled the perfect, like, kind of soft boiled egg, and it was so good, like so good. And I was eating it thinking, this is amazing. Like, this is incredible. That's just an example. My kids had a play over the weekend, and my son had to dress up like a squirrel and twirl around and dance with this big nut that he was holding. And I tell you what, like, there's nothing better than watching my son try to dance with a nut. I just, you know, so like the simple joys of life. And when you're hopeless, you don't notice those things. You don't want to take a look. Yet for everybody, even if you've been through hell recently, those things are there today. They're there right now. And
It's
you can
interesting.
feel them and see them today.
It's interesting that sometimes even the darkness that we're in is the thing that provides the contrast towards those simple things that are there every day that we don't notice when things are better. You know, like I just think of, you know, people will say to me things like, man, things have been really, really rough with my marriage. But today I saw a look on my partner's face when I saw her being generous with somebody else. And I just thought, man, I love that part of her. Or, you know, I remember one day, long, long time ago, when you would remember what it was like when we were trying to start our practice here in Logan, Utah, and it was so discouraging, so discouraging. I mean, you finally just said, "Hey, I'm out," you know. But I remember one day, just still trying to carve it out, and walking through this asphalt concrete thing to my office where I was going to have almost no appointments and try to be networking with new people that didn't probably want to talk to me, and I was just feeling so beat down and hopeless, helpless. And I happened to almost step on it. There's a little crack in this asphalt, and there was a little purple flower weed growing up out of the crack. And it stopped me dead in my tracks. And I just thought, this is the most beautiful thing I think I've ever seen. Like, there's a weed that got planted in the middle of an asphalt parking lot, and somehow it still found a way to bloom. And it was the darkness that I was feeling against the contrast of a stupid weed growing in an asphalt parking lot that was, it gave me a just a little moment of just like joy and hope. And then, of course, I took it as a metaphor that, you know, maybe I was the weed, and maybe there wasn't a lot really going for me right now, but I could find a way to bloom where I was planted. And, you know, I've shared this story before too, a few times on the podcast, but it just so stark to me, this principle. You know, a few years ago, probably 5 years ago, I found the body of a young man who had killed himself up in the mountains. And he had gone missing. He'd gone missing in November. Where we live here in Logan, Utah, in November, the hillsides are just brown, desolate, dark, gloomy. You know, you got the winter starting to blow in, more clouds. It was kind of symbolic, I think, of where he must have been at in his own life when he went missing. And when I found his body, it was the springtime, and he was surrounded by this, it was a spring morning, and he was surrounded by sunflowers growing all around him with the sun shining on him. And I sat down there, and I just thought, like, could somebody have just helped him know that that where he was lying was a bed of sunflowers, that there would be a day where there would be sunshine and growth and beauty in the very place where he was experiencing his darkest moments. And it's been my own experience in my own life that the darkest moments have actually been the birthplace of the greatest rays of light. Maybe because the contrast is so strong in those moments.
Well, Tyler, this story is awesome. We get to choose how we view the world, and we have the power within us to use our perspective to interpret life a certain way. And hopelessness is fleeting. That's why you hear ads on the radio of, you know, someone suicidal asked to hold their gun for them. Because if you can just get them past that moment, then the sunflowers start to come. Like, change is inevitable one way or the other. And so if you can hang on, that, I think that's a great tool with hopelessness, is simply hang in there.
Hang on today.
Today, it's cloudy today. There's a lot of problems. That's true. Just live and breathe today. Get through today, because there's another day around the corner and things are going to change. Things have to change.
It's the nature of the world we live in. They have to change.
Yeah. Seasons come and go, like you said. And so let the season come and let the season go, and then let's see what happens. Now, if you install all this other stuff we're talking about of, you know, support systems and gratitude and self-care and all this other stuff, your season's going to change pretty quickly.
Yeah, something can help change the seasons.
Yeah, something's going to shift pretty dramatically. And what's awesome is you can do that. Like, that's within you to do those things. But even if you don't, hang in there. Let the sun hit your face while you're still living.
Absolutely. Turn your face to the sun, so to speak, or where the sun is going to rise. That's because that's the best you can do in the moment.
It's interesting where we live, Tyler. You in Cache Valley and me here in, you know, the Great Basin here. The winters are one thing. Like, we get cold winters. They come in, snowstorms come in. But on top of the winter, what else happens to us in the winter?
We get the inversion.
Yeah, we get this inversion, and it's this, you know, because we're living in a lake bed, basically. The atmosphere holds the air in right there, and all of the pollution just stays right where we're at. So we get this nasty air, this nasty pollution on top of the coldness, and it can feel so dreary. And it's really interesting. If you drive up the mountains, you get on a ski slope or something, and you look down at the valley, you can see this covering of cloud cover and nastiness and pollution, and there's sunshine just on top of it everywhere. It's so, you know, all you have to do is drive up the mountain and get out of it. But when you're sitting in it, it feels so overwhelming. And that's hopelessness for you. If you can just see beyond just a little bit, you'll feel the sunshine.
You've tapped into one of the secrets of living through a Utah winter, Brannon, that the people who just only live in the valley and never leave it, they get that inversion, they get the clouds, they get the coldness, they get that seasonal depression. But the people who live in Utah that love living in Utah, they know that 30 minutes drive up the canyon above the clouds and the inversion, there's blue skies, there's sun sparkling on a white snow, there's clear air to breathe, there's healthy recreation. And I love what you just said there, because that to me is also one of the like tools that we can use when we're hopeless and helpless, is there is always another perspective. Yeah. There's always another perspective. 30-minute drive up the canyon, and your perspective about the entire inversion that you've been viewing or feeling is different.
Yep.
And when we can get outside of ourselves for just a minute and look at our situation from a different perspective, when there may be a different story that's there, when there may be a different way to look at it, that can actually change everything. it doesn't, that is something that can actually maybe not just help you through a bad day to help you write it out, but it might actually truly be life altering and life shifting.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'll give you an example, like some of my own stuff, my own trauma from the past. I looked at it in such a way for so long about just having been a failure, having never measured up, having never like done what I was supposed to as a person. And then I went and I did some EMDR over some of these experiences. And during the course of that EMDR, the perspective shifted totally. And there was a new story that was also maybe just as true or true as the old story, that I had actually had a heart of gold, that I was the hero in that story, that I had fought the best I could, that I'd done the best in all of those situations. And that maybe that was enough. And all of a sudden it changed. It changed everything. It didn't mean the experiences didn't happen, but looking at it from a new perspective and feeling it from a new perspective completely altered it.
Yep. Yep. And all you had to do was shift your perspective. Now that's
hard to do sometimes.
Yeah. But Tyler, that's really the therapy that we focus on, the modalities that we use these days. That's what they're designed to do, is to help you shift perspectives so that you're not continuing to create the same thing again and again. And when you can open up to a new possibility and see something differently, you can experience it differently and not be stuck in the hopelessness. And now you're on top of the mountain looking down at the inversion saying, hey, this, you know, winter goes from being horrible to being awesome, just by having that new perspective.
Yeah. Yep. Beautiful thought, Brandon.
You know, Tyler, we're not, you know, I think both of us are empaths, and I hate when I see and feel somebody who's hopeless. I hate it because I love them. And I know their pain. I feel their pain and I love them. And I think they don't need to feel that way. It doesn't need to be this way. And I can't take it from them. I can't just, you know, tell them not to feel that way, or I feel their pain. And Tyler, you and I talking about it today, in no way are we saying this is easy. No way are we saying that you should just get out of your hopelessness. We're not saying that. But we are saying that there are options for you to try to turn the tide on this, to try to shift out of it. No matter what you've done, if you've had the efforts for years, if you have a wake of destruction behind you, if there's all kinds of consequences that you're facing, I hate to tell you this, there's still hope.
You hate to tell you this. There is still hope. Yeah.
You don't have to feel hopeless. You can change. Things can get better. There's beams of light coming over that mountain as you're sitting in the darkness. And there's absolutely hope. Things always change. Hopelessness is always a lie, because hopelessness tells you nothing will get better. Things always will change.
Light has a way of finding its way into some of the darkest places, in some of the most interesting and inopportune moments. And if we're open to that and can see it and can wait for it, it will come. I'm reminded of that, you know, just verse in How Firm a Foundation that says, when through fiery trials thy pathway shall lie, my grace all sufficient shall be thy supply. The flames will not hurt thee. I only design thy dross to consume and thy gold to refine. And the hopelessness is coming from having been through a hard time. And maybe you felt overwhelmed by the hard time, but those hard times are going to bring you something. And those hard times are actually part of the recipe of happiness. Because without having those hard times, there would be no growth. And without that growth, there could be no happiness. And so anyway, hopefully this is helpful for somebody listening today.
Tyler, thanks for the discussion. Yeah, It's good talking. I kind of dreaded talking about hopelessness because it, you know, it's a downer.
Yeah.
But I think this was good. I hope if you listen to this and you're feeling hopeless in any way, I hope one little thing helped. And if you can take one little thing and make a shift today, that's all that matters.
Yeah. Thank you for being here with us. And if this is meaningful to you, please use what's there. If you know somebody who might benefit from it, please don't hesitate to share with them. And until next time, keep on keeping on.
See ya.